is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 636. I am joined today by my guest co-host, Mr. Adam Roberts. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live as we always do on Wednesdays at koop.org. Don't you go away, don't touch that dial, and all those other things.
Show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Some people say that tonight is the night.
It is Wednesday, September 29th. 2021. On the show today, we have those great folks from Gilbert and Sullivan Austin and their Fresh Takes Part 3. And then later we'll be talking to City Theater and their show Wonder of the Worlds. And of course, Adam and I will have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Detroit, and Ypsilanti, Michigan. Don't go away.
We're like those
Adam, are you there?
What kind of discussions are we having?
Lively discussions.
Oh, lively. Okay.
What I don't. I want
to. Wanted to make sure this was radio appropriate.
Oh, of course it is. Well, it depends
lively
on.
Lively discussion.
I suppose it depends on your definition of lively. Well, I'm so happy that you are joining me as a guest co-host.
Well, I am always happy to be joining you as a guest co-host, as you know.
I'm honored. We have fun, and you know, and now we're fellow professional podcasters.
That's right.
Yep. So let me ask you. Oh, well, first of all, I should say that Nicole Shiro is not here because she is traveling from the Northeast back to here in the Southwest. Yeah, she's a traveler.
Did you meet that Nicole Shiro?
Yep. Did you recognize that song that I played at the beginning, Celebration?
You know, oh my gosh, you just made my day because I was about to say that sounds a lot like Tom Jones and Harvey Schmidt because the chords and the instrumentation are really similar to the Fantastics.
God, I love that you are so smart.
And it was.
I love that you are so smart. And I keep forgetting about Celebration by Jones and Schmidt. And then they also did 110 in the Shade, as well as I Do, amongst other things.
They sure
things.
Did. And my fave, The Fantastics, which I'll just say once again, because I love to say it.
Well, you know, I've done we've talked about this before. I've done The Fantastics three times in three different roles.
That's right. You get the prize for that one.
Even in Espanol, Los Fantásticos.
No way.
Sí. Yeah, so here's this. Let's see if you can figure this out. Pronto va llover, yo me veo. Pronto va llover, yo lo sé. Pronto va llover, ay que felicidad. That's all I remember.
Where's this cast recording?
Oh my God. I was not a performer. I was a stage manager at that point. I've only performed in it once. And as a matter of fact, I played one of the fathers. And I happened to come across the review. This was my very first show in New York in 1977, way out in Brooklyn. And I got a good review. And I was 18 years old playing a father. It was funny.
Over there where a tree grows?
Yep, the tree
out
grows.
In Brooklyn? Uh-huh.
So we have a lot to talk about and really not enough time to talk about it. I do want to say that I really enjoy... International Folk Bazaar. Kim Simpson did another wonderful show, so I always love listening to him. And we're going to talk Tonys. Did you see them?
Do you know I did not see the Tonys this year?
Well,
I've heard all about it, but I haven't seen it.
Well, great. Well, we're going to talk about it. But see, here's and I was of the opinion. I really intended to not watch it at all because I was very mad at the whole process. And then they, of course, and Nicole and I have talked about it, they split it up into a streaming service, Paramount Plus, which I happen to be a subscriber of, and a CBS, basically it was a Broadway special, they said. The bulk of the awards were on the Paramount Plus platform.
I see.
But I wasn't going to watch. But I tuned into Paramount Plus, and I was so pleasantly surprised with the award ceremony itself.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, here, how many times has this happened? It finished early.
It finished early.
It was very.
No way.
It finished early. The ceremony, this was the one that was hosted by the incomparable Miss Audra McDonald. Seven-time Tony winner herself. But it was done pretty well. There are no great surprises, although there was one snub that we'll talk about. Did you hear about the snub?
I heard about the snub.
It's huge.
I sure did.
It's huge.
Like the most Tony nominations for a play ever,
for a
right?
play. Yep.
Is that
yep.
right?
Yep.
Yeah. And then no Tonys.
Yep. We're going to bury the lead. I don't want to tell people what it is, but it's a slave play. Best musical was Moulin Rouge of the three that were nominated. And interestingly enough, we've talked about this on the show that of the three nominated, none of them had original music.
None of them had original music. Isn't that crazy?
So none of them. So best score was there was not a musical in best score.
Not a musical in best score.
No. And I believe best score was taken by Scrooge. No, it's not called Scrooge. What's it called? It's the story about Scrooge.
I'm not sure.
Yes, you do.
I should know, but I probably do.
Christmas Carol.
Christmas Carol. Oh, well, yes. Yeah, I definitely know and have produced several.
So, Inheritance ran away with all of the awards instead of Slave Play, and that was a big shock to everyone. Again, as you mentioned, it had the most nominations of any play ever, and had Slave Play won, it would be the first time that a play written by a black author had ever won, ever. As it turns out,
really?
Yeah, it hasn't happened. Inheritance, I believe, was the first play written by a Latinx author. I could be wrong about that.
Definitely positive.
It is positive. I mean, there, it's not sliding Inheritance. I've not seen it, but evidently it's an amazing piece. It is about the AIDS.
Our good friend Ginger Morris just raved and raved and said she'd see it 10 more times.
Yeah, people have loved it. Didn't see it, but Slave Play was just so new and innovative for its time, dealing with what is top of mind right now, which is racism and dealing with BIPOC people in all industries, and so people think it's that it deserved at least some of the awards, if not all of them.
Well, and you know, isn't it interesting that timeliness has never seemed to be a primary criteria for award things in general. It's kind of an interest. You would think that timeliness in something that is live would be top of mind, as you said, you know?
Yeah. But it is coming back to Broadway. I should say this, I was wrong. There was a black writer, but not since 1987. And I don't know
still
what show that
still
is.
Still too long.
Still too long. It's going to open back on Broadway and run from November 23rd to January 23rd. They just want those two threes in there.
Those 8 weeks.
Yep. So I really want to see it. And I've heard varying things. I've heard people that like it. I've heard of people that don't like it. I've heard, and most of the people that don't like it, because it makes you, by its very nature, it makes you uncomfortable.
It
deals with couples of mixed race couples, and there's a big slave master kind of thing going there. I have heard from people of color that didn't like it, and that surprises me.
Interesting. I guess that, you know, it proves there's no monolith anywhere.
Yep. So back to the Tonys in general. I liked the first one. The second piece, which was just an entertainment piece, I really could have lived without for the most part.
What was it?
It was basically songs and duets that seemed to come out of nowhere in a lot of ways. Shows that weren't current. And some shows that didn't seem to make sense, and I wish I had the stuff in there that I really wanted to.
Now, is this the one that had Rent and Ragtime?
Yes, Rent and Ragtime. Okay. All great shows. And it had Anthony Rapp and what's his name? Pascal.
Adam Pascal.
Mm-hmm. You only know him because his name is Adam.
That's right. I only hang with other Adams.
They were great, but I really didn't need to hear that. The big highlight was Jennifer Holliday singing from Dreamgirls, which
and I heard that she was fantastic.
And you know what, Adam? It's not available to watch because I was in the middle of dealing with a crisis at the theater and I had to leave. I did not get to see her, and I looked for a YouTube of it and you can't find it. I've seen bits and pieces of it, but it was supposed to be amazing. And she was evidently just totally chewing the scenery and loving it.
Well, that's her. The highlight so far of my career was getting to do that song with her one time.
Oh my gosh, that's huge.
It was a bucket list item, and I am one of those few fortunate people that got their bucket list item granted.
Well, tell me when you did that and how. Tell me the circumstances around that. That sounds fun.
About 3 years ago, I was conducting the Texas Medal of Arts Awards for the Texas Cultural Trust. And Jennifer was the awardee that year of the Texas Medal of Arts for, I think, theater, I believe.
Yes, I do. I do remember that because our good friend Nick Mayo was directing that or producing that, putting it together, if I remember correctly.
Yes, he was doing that the year before, and then Rod Casper and Paul Butel did it the year that I did it.
Ah, you know, Rod Casper is a friendly ghost.
I'm telling you, isn't he the best?
I actually don't know him.
Casper the Friendly Ghost. But you don't know Rod?
I don't.
Okay.
I know.
He is a friendly ghost. You're correct.
I'm sure he is. Well, I do need to say that Nicole did send me an email, and she loved all the things that I did not like.
Shocker.
I know. She loved the opening with Leslie Odom Jr. and what's his name? Like, we call him the Grobes. Why did I lose his name? I'll come up with it. But everybody knows who I'm talking about when I talk about Grobes. I hate getting old, Adam. I hate it. she loved that. I thought it was a little staid and not very original. Jennifer Holliday was great. Evidently, Variety called her Jennifer Hudson, which is oops.
Oops. Yeah, for real.
Yep.
We're talking about the original.
The original
Effie, right? Because Jennifer Hudson did play that role in the movie, right?
In the movie, but I believe Jennifer Holliday played it on Broadway.
Absolutely. She was the original. Yeah. The originator.
So there was one piece that some people, again, didn't really need to hear it today, but it was really kind of beautiful. What the pretense of the evening was duet. So they had, you know, Jonathan Larson and Adam Pascal and all these people doing duets. They had Audra and what's his name from
Brian Stokes Mitchell.
Brian Stokes Mitchell's beautiful from Rags. Mm-hmm. And they had Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth singing
For Good.
And I have to tell you, that was beautiful. I mean, just the sentiment and Kristen Chenoweth was choking up as she was singing. And it was just very, very, at the end of it, I was like choking back a little bit of tear and going, that's super sweet. And it was.
And it's kind of like breaking down the proscenium because this is something everybody's experienced, you know? And I'm sure being in that room at the Winter Garden really felt like a communal experience.
Yep. Also in the New York Times, there'll be a link at offstageonair.com. It was the best and the worst of the Tonys. I agreed with most everything they said. And I'm gonna look for it on my computer here. I didn't cue things up properly. There it is. Tony's best and worst. Of course, Jennifer Holliday was the best. And also everybody's been talking about this. I don't watch red carpets. And evidently this red carpet was really good.
Oh, interesting.
People were saying good things about it.
Good. Well, that's nice.
Yeah. So one of the best one was Sonia Taillez speech after her award for winning Best Choreographer. And I'm sure I'm mispronouncing her name, but she said, and I quote, "As a brown, queer, Arab-American woman, I wasn't always welcomed. It takes graceful hands to lead people like me to the door." Then she said, "It's been 10 years since a woman has won this award. Though I'm honored to be part of this legacy is too small." First of all, I'm surprised in the category of choreographer that there were not, that it's been 10 years since a woman was.
I know. Yeah, that surprises me too.
That surprises me. But she was, it was a beautiful, I happened to be watching and saw that speech. It was really, really gorgeous.
Well, and what a sentiment that is also a charge, you know? It's a charge and a mission and beautiful.
Yep. So then the last thing that I was looking forward to the finale was going to be Freestyle Love Supreme. And I was so looking forward to that. Never seen them. It's done mostly improv and it was not all that good.
Really?
It seemed more put together than improv. And I mean, and they work really well with improv, but they couldn't do it like at the spur of the moment in this case. So I was a little disappointed, but I will still go see them if I get a chance.
Yeah, hopefully not representative of the actual experience.
Yes. Now, do you know who Jennifer Nettles is?
No.
I didn't either. I had to look her up during the Tonys. She sang, oh my God, what did she sing? I forgot what she sang at the Tony Awards. But she is going into Waitress. She's following Sarah Bareilles into Waitress. Mm-hmm. She's a country western singer. And she's done, she did a stint as Roxy on Cabaret. And she did Waitress. But I thought that was interesting. I thought she was also in Hollywood Bowl. She did Mamma Mia. She did all the big money stuff.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So I do not see where that is. But I'm glad that you didn't know her because I felt really, really silly not knowing her.
I do not. No, no. But I learned something new just now.
Oh, good. Yay. And then I will tell folks that Danny Burstein wrote a guest essay for the New York Times. And Danny Burstein, he's been nominated, I think, 8 or 10 times, never won.
Yeah.
He won this time. And boy, was the crowd with him. They wanted him to win. And of course, you know, his wife just died. Not all that long ago. I just want to read one piece, and this is about coming back to theater and what theater means to the world, and why it's important for others to appreciate theater. So he said, quote, "For theater isn't just a form of entertainment. At its best, it is a collective, spiritual experience. It is church for the heart and mind. It is shul for the intellect, a mosque celebrating mankind. It reminds us how beautiful life can be and how fragile it is as well. It helps us form opinions and gain insight and into the lives of our fellow humans." And then he goes on to talk about some of the more practical stuff around theater. But I just thought that was really beautiful.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. And his speech at the Tony's was really wonderful as well. And the final thing we'll talk about before we go to break is the Broadway Advocacy Coalition that got a special Tony last night. And this is a group of people that started prior to the pandemic, prior to George Floyd. It was actually around the time of, one of the tragic murders of a black man by police. I forgot which one, which is sad. That's a sad statement in of itself that I can't remember which one. But anyway, it's a group about bringing more equity to theater. They received a special Tony last night, and they did a performance. And I want to play, as we go to break, I'm going to play a little bit of it. Do you have anything to add about in general the Broadway Advocacy Coalition?
I would just say that, you know, last summer, not long after the death of George Floyd, the Broadway Advocacy Coalition, wow, did they step into the world of the professional theater, the Broadway theater. Yeah. I attended a couple of their offerings, their seminars, their calls to action from the professional theater community virtually, and incredible, incredible, life-changing work.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we'll listen to this. Most of it is dance, so you'll just hear feet and things like this, but there are words, and I just find it very interesting. So we'll see you guys when we come back from the break.
See you soon.
There's nothing wrong with silence. Until there is. I'm talking about silent silence. Not silence is golden silence, though. Silence is no longer golden when talk is cheap and actions are hollow, empty like safes with nothing invested, because there's nothing safe about an individual or institution that is uninvested in the safety of others. Always gaining interest in the silence, so quiet, but always very vocal.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Adam. That was such a great talk about the Tonys. I really, really, really enjoyed it. And Adam's not with me right now. He'll join us again after the next section. But I really enjoyed talking to him. And so I'll make a point of saying that when he comes back. We're going to run right into our very first interview today, and that's with Michael Meggs of the Gilbert and Sullivan Austin. They used to be called the Gilbert and Sullivan Society of Austin, and you will learn how they changed that. So we're going to just jump right in and listen to that interview with Michael Meggs. Here it is. The Gilbert and Sullivan Society, who does so many things for them, is the bursar. So those of you that know Hamilton know that you punch the bursar, as well as the head of the programming committee and everything else. And I should also say Michael Meggs runs the Central Texas Live Theater website here, which is such a big part of our Central Texas and Austin area theater community. Michael Meggs, welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here in the Zoom room with you, Lisa.
You are indeed in the Zoom room. And if truth were to be known, we're not in the Zoom. Well, actually, we are in the
It's
Zoom
a pretty
room.
Zoomy room where we are.
Well,
here.
Actually, the device we're recording on is called a Zoom recorder. Oh, so there
okay.
You go. So, Michael, I'm not sure because I'm old and decrepit. Have you been on Offstage and On the Air before?
In fact, you invited me specially on, and it's been a couple of months ago to talk about CTX Live Theater. But earlier than that, I was on with some other actors for City Theater's Taming of the Shrew, and that's been, oh gosh, 3 or 4 years ago, maybe more.
Taming of the Shrew, that's a show that's not problematic.
Yeah.
Speaking of problematic, working with the Gilbert and Sullivan Society, you guys have been around for a long, long time.
That's right. We're going into our 46th year right now. And in fact, Michelle Ache had suggested a kind of an update, a rebranding. We put up a new logo about 3 or 4 years ago, and we changed our name from Gilbert and Sullivan Society to Gilbert and Sullivan Austin, and we're working in that direction.
Awesome. I think the last time Gilbert and Sullivan was on Offstage and On the Air was probably about 10 years ago in a production of Yeoman on the Guard.
Yep, that
Yeoman
sounds
the Guard
right.
That I actually went down to rehearsal and recorded one day. It was really fun to watch the rehearsal process. So I wanted to have you on the show to talk about what's happening currently and what your fresh takes, which actually were sort of late to the game in that you just released the third version and you've got the fourth version on the way. So tell folks who probably, I'm going to guess a lot of people may not know about this, what is Gilbert and Sullivan Fresh Takes?
Well, Fresh Takes is Gilbert and Sullivan Austin reaching out to Austin artists and saying, hey, why don't you take Gilbert and Sullivan scenes and update them, do them the way you would like to see them done? This happened because we were going to do the Mikado, which was going to be set in Scotland back in 2020, but COVID shut that down. So we, for a while, we streamed free of charge some of our previous DVD recordings. And then someone, I don't know if it was me, said, in fact, it was Michelle Ache. Oh. She said, well, why don't you get Austin artists to create new thinkings, new reimaginings And eventually we liked the idea and came up with a title for Fresh Takes. Now, as of right now, we have done 14 of these Fresh Takes, and they are wild. They are all over the place. My favorite so far, at least among those that have been streamed, well, there are two. There's HMS Pinafore, done entirely in Spanish,
yeah,
directed
Sebastian
by
Vitale.
Exactly, and he did a super job. And the whole concept, it turns out, is a rock video. Very, very funny. And streaming right now at www.gilbertsullivan.com is the third episode, which starts off with a 27-minute video done by Casey Beeler and the American Berserker Theater, plus contemporary music group Density 512. And
they recorded the music.
Exactly. They reorchestrated it. They've done it. It's wild. It's based on the opening parts of The Pirates of Penzance. And the title is The Computer Pirates of Penzance Avenue. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And believe me, I don't want you to think that I take offense that the piece that I did wasn't among your
Well, in fact, the piece that you did was inspired, and we said, uh-oh, are we going to get in trouble if we put this on our streaming? So it took us about almost 2 months to go through this and finally find somebody in the corporate world who says, well, as long as you're not using it for fundraising, it's okay.
Yeah.
So you're going to be coming up in October.
Yeah, I was actually speaking of our Mikado with Def Austin Theater.
Oh, got it. That was wonderful.
But I'm actually really proud of it. So what I love about these Fresh Takes is exactly it. They are fresh takes. Gilbert and Sullivan is not known for, you know, being attracted to the kids, as they say, to
yes.
the new generation.
Right.
But these pieces have really taken a whole new take on it. I know with our piece, there's same-sex relationships, there's gender switching, there's all sorts of stuff, and there's a lot of different ways that we are taking Gilbert and Sullivan's beautiful words and music and text and swapping them up for a more contemporary audience.
Well, you know, that's what we wanted to do. Two things. Well, first of all, we wanted to keep producing during the COVID downtimes, but we also wanted to reach out to new audiences and to new actors and performers. And we have come up with some great performers. We're offering them free subscriptions to our newsletter so that they'll know what we're doing, and who knows, maybe they'll come back to us.
There you go. Well, I hope that's the case. We're kind of running out of time. So I know Fresh Takes 3 is available now.
Correct.
At GilbertAndSullivanAustin.com.
No, it's GilbertSullivan.com.
org.
And it's on YouTube, and you can go from the website right to YouTube and get it full screen.
And so the fourth Fresh Takes, number 4, will premiere at what point? Oh, so the current one is available to what date?
It runs 4 weeks, so that means until October 18th, and then right away we open the fourth one, which has got Liz Fisher doing...
The incomparable Liz
Fisher. The amazing Liz Fisher doing numbers from Yeoman of the Guard with puppets, and Carolyn Reck, Amber Quick, and Sarah Marie Curry.
All people I love so much.
And then there's also a piece from Princess Ida that's being directed by Helen Soyun Park of the Butler School of Music. With this is the one where three guys sneak into a women's into a castle that's a women's university, and it's going to be terrific.
Awesome.
And there will be Lisa Sheps doing something unexpected.
That's true. And once the fourth one has run its course, so it's premiered and it's 4 weeks later, are you going to make these available to folks that may have missed number 1 and 2 and 3?
Eventually, yes. We're going to be doing a Wish You Were Here performance video, which will be individual singers in an empty theater performing favorite things, and that'll be run through the holidays. But come the new year, we're going to take apart all these 16 fresh takes, and they will be available at the website and on our YouTube channel. Great stuff.
Wonderful. Well, Michael Meggs, thank you so much for joining me again at Offstage and on the Air.
Thank you very much. And Gilbert and Sullivan Austin, thanks you and all the artists who have been participating.
My eyes are fully open to my awful situation. I should go at once to Mabel Lemo, make her adoration. I would tell her I am bound by duty and my moral senses, and I don't know what to do about the penny consequences. Now I do know what to perish by the sword or by the dagger, but a pirate must indulge a little pot of double swagger and a word or two of compliment my vanity would flatter. But I've got to go tonight, and so it really doesn't matter.
So it really doesn't matter.
So it really doesn't matter. So it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Well, there we are. And Lisa Sheff is going to do something unexpected. I'm shocked.
It's true. I have done something unexpected. So it'll air soon. It's fun. That actually was a very, very fun project. And we will be making the piece that Ground Floor Theater and Deaf Austin Theater available on our YouTube channel very soon because I just got permission to do it.
Fantastic.
I love that. The song that we just heard was My Eyes Are Fully Open from Pirates of Penzance. And I have to admit that I thought that was from Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Oh, I see. Was it? Yes.
Because that song, the song, the word song is that music with different lyrics.
A little homage for that.
Yeah,
for sure.
I had no idea. I'm not, I'm not very smart.
I would say that's not true, but I would say that you're right, that that's an homage to some Millie going on there and it's Mr. Grayson or whatever his name is in that musical.
Yeah, it's more than a homage. So let me ask you this. Have you seen Dear Evan Hansen on stage?
I have not seen Dear Evan Hansen.
In any, you didn't even see it when it came through? So you've never seen it on stage?
I did not.
Well, I did, and I liked it. I actually was able to see the original, and then I saw it when it came through here. That would be at Austin, Texas, at Broadway Across America. Well, and there's a film that is coming out, that's already been reviewed, so people that are in the know have already seen it. Do you plan to watch it, and have you been hearing any of the controversy around it?
I do plan to watch it, and I have been hearing a lot of controversy. The biggest thing that I have heard is, because I do know the story and the music, of course, and the biggest thing that I've heard is that, folks kind of feel like they cut, that the songs they cut were the ones that really sort of were where that character realizes he's being held accountable for what he's done. And so that's the biggest thing I've heard, that sort of like, aside from the, obviously Ben Platt's a little old to be playing that role, but hey, I don't have a problem with that.
I don't have a problem with that either. I've heard varying, it's funny, one critic said that he did such a good job of toning down his performance from his Broadway performance, and then another critic equally as adept at criticism said exactly the opposite, that he was playing too broad as if he were on a Broadway stage and not on a film. But I'll tell you what, so many people, and this is sort of making me a little angry, don't like the piece in general because it is taking a character that does not great things and making him the hero of the piece. But I don't know why it's okay for us to love anti-heroes on television, but not okay for us to watch anti-heroes on Broadway. It doesn't make sense to me. Why can't he be a deeply flawed person from beginning to end?
Yeah, somehow it seems as though, I guess, on TV, right, that there's and somehow we assume that TV is only for our entertainment, whereas theater is meant for something more or something,
Yeah.
And I think it's an interesting, I agree that it's an interesting paradox that people have with it. And again, that goes back to what I've been hearing from people who have sort of been upset that the songs that were taken out were actually about the accountability factor. So clearly that whatever side somebody comes down on with that is clearly, it's something people are thinking and talking about.
Well, I actually hadn't heard that part, and that's actually, that makes a lot of sense. But I will make my judgment when I see it because I'm one of the people that do like the stage play, so I'm hoping I also like the film.
Yeah, same here. No, I agree.
Thornton Wilder wrote a little piece called Skin of Our Teeth back in 1960-something. And it is
going... Was that before or after Our Town?
I don't know what the chronology of that was. It's coming back, but Skin of Our Teeth is very interesting. I keep forgetting about it. I haven't read it or seen it, and every time I hear about it, I say, I need to read this. But it's going to be done by Lincoln Center. The little blurb says, it follows a New Jersey family as they survive the Ice Age, a flood, and a war. It also won the Pulitzer in 1942. So when I said 1960, I meant 1942. It opened on Broadway in 42, and it's had a revival in 55 and 75, and now 2021.
Wow. Isn't that an interesting trajectory for a play?
Yeah.
In terms of revival.
Yeah,
55, 75, 2021.
Yep, and it's going to be directed by the artistic director of Lincoln Center, resident director of Lincoln Center, Liliana Blaine Cruz.
Very good. Well, that's exciting to see a play coming back in that way.
I know. And I'm a big fan. We just talked about Our Town. There was a podcast I listened to talked about Our Town. So, and just how everybody's doing it and how it's very current even as we speak. A couple other things I want to talk about. The Dramatists Guild created an equity rider for their members. It's optional, but it's a way for playwrights to add into their contract to tell producers to audition diverse actors for their roles.
Huh, really? You know what's interesting about that is I just got an email today from the Stage Directors and Choreographers Union.
Which used to be called SSDNC, and now it's called something else.
FDC now. They took out an F.
I like the SSDNC, but go ahead.
I know, right? It's interesting. I haven't read it yet, but what they were giving people was language that was, they call it inclusion language for their own contract. So it's interesting that that came out today as well. I haven't looked at it, but maybe it's similar.
Yeah, that's important. All right. I want to make sure we get to today in theater history and talk about some other stuff. But I do want to say there was an article in the New York Times written by Katie Rogers about Stephanie Grisham's book on detailing... Mm-hmm. Donald Trump's terrifying temper, but one of the things that's came out that'll make our audience interesting is that he had an official known as the Music Man that played him his favorite show tunes, and the one that they called
and
out
I
was
pretty surprised at what the number one show tune was that they mentioned.
Yeah, memories. Yeah. That's funny. So two local things I want to talk about before we get into today in theater history. And one of those is Robert Ferris's farewell to the Austin Chronicle. As our listeners know, he retired. There was a party for him last week at the Vortex, which was just wonderful. And he wrote a lovely final piece in the Chronicle, which will be linked at offstageonair.com. Did you read that piece?
I did read that piece. And to talk about a farewell and a true veteran.
Yeah,
and not even a veteran, but a shaper of the Austin theater scene.
Absolutely. So I should probably get him on the show and just talk about him because we could talk about him for easily an hour.
Oh, he would be the best episode. Like, so great.
Yeah, what a loss for the community. What a loss for the Chronicle. I hope they replace him. I have a feeling they won't.
You know, I would not say that I haven't had the same thought process as you.
Yep.
And I used to write for the Chronicle.
I did know that. Mm-hmm. He was your editor, wasn't he?
He was my editor for all that time because, I mean, obviously 35 years.
You're not even 35 years old.
You know, I might have a special birthday coming up this year that's just a little over 35.
Give you both mazel and tov.
Oh, I like that.
So I want to talk a little bit about Resolution Creative. I want folks to hear about what you are doing.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. You know, we my friend and former student and now colleague at Resolution Creative, Dave Hawks, and I are, you know, this we started the company right before the pandemic, January 2020, or right before, I guess I should say, the pandemic hit Austin in earnest. But we really, through some conversations with friends and especially artists around social media in particular, also digital media, but really social media, we had so many friends who were artists that were just talking about how sort of gross they felt social media was and how commodifying it could be, but also sort of how necessary for their careers. And we thought, well, Dave's a really wonderful filmmaker, videographer, and photographer, and I have a background in strategy for communications and media. And so we thought, well, why don't we put those two things together and help people really find a way to be their authentic selves and also reach their goals in terms of their brand and marketing as artists. And so that's what we've been working on. And it's been so fulfilling because we think it's important too, obviously, but we also think that there's really success to be had in being yourself and being authentic.
Yep. Well, if folks want to find out more about Resolution Creative, where can they go?
They can go to Resolutionary, like revolutionary, but with an S, works.com, or follow us at Resolutionary Works on social.
Awesome. Or as I learned today, just like even during the show, SM, which I always thought was stage manager, but evidently other people think it's social media.
Oh, social media. Yes, yes. I see. I was like, SM. I thought you said FM.
No, first. Somebody sent me an email and said something about SM, and I went, I don't know what SM means. Why can't children speak in sentences?
Right? Isn't it the truth?
Yeah. We don't have time to do all of Today in Theater History, but I'm going to hit one thing, which is in 1934, George Kaufman and Moss Hart wrote a comedy that opened on this day at the Music Box Theater, and it was called Merrily We Roll Along. And I had no idea that the musical, the Stephen Sondheim musical, Merrily We Roll Along, was based on a Kaufman and Hart play. Did you know that?
Pretty crazy, right?
You probably knew it.
I did know that because not too long ago, I watched the documentary Best Worst Thing That Ever Could Have Happened, and that was...
Did you just watch that recently?
I did watch it recently.
Oh my God, it's a wonderful documentary, and that's a it's a documentary about Merrily We Roll Along. And you know, Jason Alexander is a friend of mine, and I called him afterwards and told him how much I enjoyed seeing him.
I didn't know that. Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah, well, that was me. You know, I find any opportunity that I can drop a name.
There you go. I love it. Don't we all, darling?
Well, Adam, we're going to go to break again, and I'm going to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for joining me here on Offstage and on the Air. I love working with you. You'll have to do it again.
Please, anytime at all. You know I'm here. I love it, and thank you.
Okay, darling. Well, I will see you very soon.
See you all soon. Have a good day.
So we will go take a little break, and then we'll go right into our final interview. And we are going to listen to a little bit of Merrily We Roll Along from the, I believe it was the 2012 revival. Here it is.
Hey, old friend, are you okay? Old friend, what do you say? Old friend, are we or are we unique? Time.
We are back. This is Lisa Sheps with Offstage and On the Air. We're going to just jump right into our next interview with City Theater and their show, Wonder the Worlds. Here it is. Well, here in the Zoom room, joining me in the great city of Austin through the miracle of technology, I have two of the cast members from City Theater and Beyond August Productions, production of Wonder of the World by David Lindsay Hebert. And here with me in the room is Shannon Embry. Welcome back, Shannon.
Thank you, Lisa.
And new to the show, we have Jill Klopp-Turner.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
You are quite welcome. So, Wonder of the World. I'll tell folks of the poster. I don't know a lot about this show, just what I've read on Wikipedia. But it shows someone going over the Niagara Falls in a barrel, and I think that's telling of the show. So can y'all tell us a little bit about the show?
Sure. It is a absurdist kind of madcap buddy comedy that is really fast and really fun. You kind of have to strap in from word one and just kind of go along for the ride. It's about a woman who decides to leave her husband for mysterious reasons that are discovered throughout the show, to go and then escapes to Niagara Falls to find her true self and seeks out her true destiny. And then, of course, the hilarity that ensues.
And Sarah Jessica Parker was in this when it played in New York.
That's right.
That's pretty amazing. Along with and not really burying the lead, but Amy Sedaris, who I also just love.
Really, I mean that's really why we're all in it for anything, really.
exactly. So also, I should say that it had its premiere at the Woolly Mammoth Theater in D.C. I just love saying the Woolly Mammoth, so I bring it up anytime right. I can.
Perfect. Yes.
Okay. Portraying the. What's that thing? The waterfalls, Niagara Falls, on a stage is difficult. Does it take place at Niagara Falls?
Yes, it does. And we do have, there are a couple scenes in the show that are taking place on the hurricane deck, which is like the viewing deck to see the falls. And then, the Niagara Falls does make its own secret special appearance in the show.
Oh, good. Well, I don't want to take anything away from you guys, but I have been to Wonders of the World. At the falls.
The Maid of the Mist boat, you mean?
I wasn't on the boat. There's a thing where you walk out, and I think it's the Wonders of the World. It's steps that you actually walk out, and you wear these really great, like... the Gordon's fisherman outfits. Yes. It's really fun. So what do you each play? Shannon, what role do you play?
So I play the Amy Sedaris character. So you actually find out a little bit more about who I am over the course of the show, so I won't say too much. But yes.
Do you have a character name, or is it called the Amy Sedaris character?
You would call it a utility player, and I come out all throughout the play. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Usually the more fun ones to play, because I'm guessing you get to play a lot of different character arcs.
It's very challenging, and there's limits on which ones can have accents and which ones can't. And to make sure that you've got these distinct characters, I can see why they needed a talent like Amy Sedaris to fill these shoes on the off-Broadway stage. But I'm having a ton of fun with it.
Oh, good. Yes. And I guess it sounds like you're under the cone of secrecy and you can't tell us a lot more. So if folks want to learn more about...
I think my friend Jill here will be able to tell you a little bit more specifics.
Okay, Jill, who do you play?
I play the Sarah Jessica Parker character named Cass, the woman who decides to leave her husband and change her life.
And what is fun about that character? Tell us a little bit about her.
Yeah, the most fun about Cass is that she is an eternal, like she's a cockeyed optimist, if you know that song.
I do.
Everything that she sees is bright green and beautiful. She leads with her heart outside of her body, and sometimes it gets nicked along the way. But it's a lot of fun to play somebody who is so wide open and willing to just join and be and participate.
Great. So now I believe Andy Rakowski is directing this piece.
He is.
Awesome. And Andy, as we all know, he's been on the show many, many times, is the founder and artistic director of City Theater Company. And you may or may not be able to speak to this, but do you guys know why... City Theater is doing this show at this point in time?
Well, I think it's because we approached Andy several months ago about doing this show. It's been kind of a passion project and dream of mine personally to do this show. I actually worked on the crew on this show when I was in college at the University of Oklahoma. And I have kind of kept it in my back pocket for amount of years since then, and have really made it, had it as a personal goal of mine to produce and put it up one day and play Cass. And I've tried a couple of times in the years past, and the ducks just didn't line up. And then finally they did. And Andy directed Shannon and a couple of the other cast members and myself in August, Osage County. In 2017, and we enjoyed working with him, so we decided to approach him and ask him to join up and be partners to produce this show, this passion project.
Well, great. You've just actually segued into the next topic that I wanted to discuss, and we'll get back to particulars about the show. But as you mentioned, you were in y'all were in Austin Osage County, and I'm guessing just by the name of it, Beyond Austin Productions, or After August Productions. Help me with the name.
Beyond August.
Oh, I was right first, except yeah. I think I said autumn. Beyond August Production, I'm guessing, was born during that production, and y'all came together. So tell us about Beyond August Productions. Oh, and I should say that it also answers my question that you guys brought this to City Theater.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Shannon. I'll take it.
Yes. Well, as Jill mentioned, we are actually all the Weston family from Austin, Osage County. So we're a highly dysfunctional family on stage, and what was a really fantastic experience just 5 years ago. Beyond August Production is myself, Jill Klopp-Turner, here with us today, Patrick Wheeler, and Robin Connor. She's a wonderful comedic and dramatic actress, but she's high comedy in this show. And we just loved working together. And you know, after you finish a show, you have such wonderful feelings, Ed, but often you just stop hanging out with the people as much, right? It's not because you don't like them or don't enjoy them anymore, but it's just that it doesn't work out. But we have actually really stayed close these past 5 years. We go to shows together, we get together, and we really build each other artistically. And Jill has the specific project that she's always wanted to do, and that gave us the opportunity to really start something. And it's been difficult with COVID, but I think this is the perfect first project for us, and I'm excited to see what we do in the future.
Well, then I've got a little bone to pick with you guys. You keep answering my questions before I ask them. was going to be my question. Is this your first production? So indeed it is. Yep. So presuming this all goes swimmingly, what do you see for the future for Beyond August Productions?
We hope that we can continue to, that we do deliver a show that audiences really do connect to. And one of our, I guess, our mission statement really is that we are a community and audience focused production company. We really appreciate the relationship between the artist and the audience. We are proud and avid audience members of all types of art here in Austin, the four of us. And we decided that it would, you know, we wanted to definitely put focus on that relationship, because it's such it's like a simpatico relationship that one doesn't exist without the other. So we thought, well, the things that we want to put out are going to be really entertaining that people want to see. They're not going to be a 3 or 4 hour long saga, you know, things like that. We thought this is a fun relationship that we want to really celebrate. We're so grateful to Austin audiences in so many aspects of our life. I'm a really big music fan, and I go see a lot of live music, and I sing in a 90s cover band. And so there's a lot, I have so much appreciation for people that go out and see things. So we thought we'll just kind of make that our driving force for the art that we're going to put out there.
Well, wonderful. I'm glad we're happy to welcome as many theater companies as possible. So I'm glad y'all are adding to the firmament here in the Austin theater community, because it's a loving and wonderful community, and we love to keep adding folks. So going back to Wonders of the World, first of all, let's talk about, so we were talking before we went on the air that COVID, we've officially gone into stage 4, which is really good news. Odd to say that, but it is really good news. We've been in stage 5 for a while. What are you guys doing for COVID mitigation? What can I expect as an audience member?
Well, you know, it's funny. Since we went into stage 4, we're not sure what our theater's guidelines are for stage 4. We know what they are for stage 5. So honestly, I don't have a solid answer for that. We were selling only, you know, the theater to half capacity and requiring audience members to show proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test, and requiring the audience to be masked. And all of that is, of course, we agree, you know, with the theater's safety protocol. But we are not sure what their new protocol is, if it is new. So,
okay. Well, my guess is we would find that on the website. Can you tell us the website to go to see information about the show?
Yeah. CityTheaterAustin.org.
CityTheaterAustin.org. And when does the show open and when does it close?
Opens October 8th, next Friday. Closes Sunday, October 24th. And it runs Thursday through Sunday.
Awesome. And again, folks can get information at CityTheaterAustin.org. Does Beyond August Productions have a website as of yet?
We don't have a website, but we do have an Instagram at Beyond August Productions. And we have a Facebook page, Beyond August Productions.
Awesome. Well, Shannon Embry and Jill Klopp-Turner, thank you so much for joining me on Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you for having us, Lisa.
I trust that you will have a hilarious run.
Indeed.
Niagara Falls, the rush of falls.
Well, that's it for Offstage and On the Air. We are running a little late with our next program, so I'm going to continue to play music, so you'll hear some more show tunes as we go. Coming up next is Mark Fort and Texas Music Matters. And then I'm going to play this song. I'm going to let it play through to the end. Then we'll play From Moulin Rouge, So Exciting. And finally, if we have time, we're going to play another song. Stand by. Sorry, it was out. I couldn't move with my headset on. If we have time before Mark gets here, we are going to play from Baker Street, I'm in London Again. So we'll see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Enjoy the music.
The smell of her.
Oh, and I should say, this is KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but doesn't this tour include any place that's not destroyed?
Haven't you heard? Times are tough.
Surely there must be something. Cavern of the Winds.
Besieged by wolves.
Chapel on the Lake.
Chapel in the...